This is an awareness session. We're going to talk about different attack tools, the different tools that you should be aware about defending your IT environments of today. We're not going to cover every tool out there. We're just going to give you some examples that we think are very current and valid. Some of them have been around for a while, but still, I think they're very important. Some of them are newer. And if you have never seen our sessions before, this is going to be a complete live session. We don't do any PowerPoints or anything like that. We're just going to play with our computers. If you think it's unstructured, that's because it is. Okay? And this session is recorded, so even though there are no notes, you can find it on Channel 9 later. So if you want to see stuff again or make notes yourself, it's going to be out there. So no worries. You can sit back and relax. And if you don't know who I am, I'm Marcus Murray. I'm the security manager, or cybersecurity manager. Everything is cyber nowadays, for a team called TruSec. We do a lot of penetration testing, incident response, different kind of advanced IT security, or sorry, cybersecurity nowadays. You can charge more when you say cybersecurity, like reverse engineering, all that stuff. So, being the team manager, I can see what's going on in each and every project in my company. So I see a lot and I learn a lot. So my objective when I do these sessions is to share that with you guys. I want to give you a glimpse of my world. So if you walk away with something that you didn't know before, then I'm really happy. So that's been driving me for, I don't know, 10, 15 years doing tech as now. I do remember the first time I brought a sign along. I felt I needed someone with me. I mean, we've been working together for a long time. Mm-hmm. But they wouldn't allow me to take it. I was a new kid on the block. I didn't have anything to say. So, and I told them, I want my friend. And they're like, no, you're not going to have a friend. We're not going to pay for his I can't curse. You're not going to pay for his ticket or anything. So I brought him along anyway, and I forced them. I said, I'm not going to do it unless you bring him in. And they had like hundreds and hundreds of people in the audience. So that was interesting. I did one bad thing, though, that day. I presented him for the first time and myself. And he's a very smart guy, but I was trying to be funny. So I said, well, we really complete each other. I am the mouth, he's the brain. So after that, nobody wanted to talk to me anymore because everybody thought I was so stupid. So, anyhow, this is a smart dude. You can present yourself if you want to, even though I'm the mouth.
Yeah, I guess I could just copy whatever he said, and especially the brain part.
Humble too. I like that.
Well, a lot of IT security, of course, but I started once back in the days with developing. Worked with C++, Wacom C++ on OS2. Back in the days, a very, simple way of virtualizing. We're developing network NLM modules. If any of you have been working with Noval Network, you'll remember these days, I hope.
Yeah, I always brag about him. He wrote his first application that was a fairly complex application without even having a computer. So he wrote the code on paper because he read a book that he got from his brother. And when they bought a computer like 2 years later, it all compiled.
Yeah, that's how cool. Everybody's supposed to learn programming, yeah. I guess.
So yes.
You get it right from the beginning.
Yeah, why fail? You and yeah. Mozart, right? So anyhow.
Let's go and go.
Yeah, let's start this session.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to do something, a little funny thing, I think. Have you seen, there are new features in Windows all the time. So I'm going to just shut this guy down. This is just a computer, if you didn't know. If you're in the right place, you know this is a computer. It's actually a virtual machine, but I'm going to start this up. And I think it struck me, working in security, that things are changing. We used to have problems with the script kiddie hackers and stuff. Nowadays, some people are even worried about governments, right? Not maybe your government, but stuff like that. Yeah, don't believe everything Snowden said, right? So anyhow, I mean, there are things like this old ease of use button. You seen that one before? Ease of access. It's so strange, this things that keeps happening in them. And when you try to find it, it's strange because, for example, if I would use this, like a government would maybe, at user, whatever, Mark Russ. He doesn't work for the government. It's not true. He works for Microsoft. I'm just joking. So anyhow, Mark password. And it's getting dark here. Net's local group. Administrators. Do you know where this is going? That means you're old. You've done this too long. This is old school. So the funny thing is now, if we just stop this, do whatever, just shut it down again, and try another time. Of course, it's going to be there, the Mark Russ account. But this is gone. Strange, huh? So they can be there whenever they want to, and they can disappear. Now, I'm just joking with you, but it's kind of interesting. I'm going to talk about this first problem that is very common in this world. I have this tendency of using long passwords. It's kind of annoying. I'm going to have to use Mark's account, as I normally do. So anyhow, why am I talking about this? This is just a registry entry that I did that will give you physical access. So I think the first thing I want to talk about is physical access and the tools that you should worry about when it comes to physical access. So I'm just going to bring out these simple examples of stuff that you should worry about. For example, USB sticks aren't always what they're supposed to be. This is a rubber ducky. This is a computer. This was a script in rubber ducky. So if you can put the rubber ducky in there, there's a good chance that you can actually have access. So the old rules apply. If a bad guy has physical access to your computer, it's not your computer anymore. And other tools that we've shown before is, for example, this Windows scope. I used to demonstrate it live, but he wanted me to pay for it, so I'm going to send it back. And the dude who gave it to me. But this will actually present itself as a RAM controller to the computer. So if you just plug it in there, you don't have to log on with a username or password. You can just press enter, and you will be logged on as the user of whoever was logged in last time. So there are a lot of tools out there that you should think and worry about. And of course, the solution is fairly known, yet not very often implemented. BitLocker, Trusted Boot, Secure Boot, the newer operating system with all those features. Using those, it will actually be way better. But that's one thing, that's physical. We don't worry much about physical nowadays, right? We're worried about the internet. So let's do the next one. The fact that people do a lot of web surfing, we can prove it because we've been sniffing wireless all week. So if you really want to know what you've been doing, we have a log. You can just come up to us. If you forgot your password, we may be able to reset them for you. Reset them for you, sorry. So let's do a little demo to talk about this. And we're going to use a tool that you should know and worry about. It's called SET, Social Engineering Toolkit. And this toolkit can do a lot of things. We're going to start with a demo, then we're going to talk about it. We're not just using SET. We're using another tool that you should know and worry about called Interceptor. And of course, we're going to show you later what they look like and how we set this up. But let's see what they can do first.
Let's see if that works.
Yeah, don't fail me now. You're the smart guy.
You can well, do it's it all now. About Gmail, so... Yep. Wait.
Why are you laughing? That's not funny. At least not to Mark. So, well, this is Kali Linux.
Oh, okay, let's see.
Exception happened. That's because you run Linux. Mm-hmm. Maybe run something more stable.
So let me just rerun. Yeah.
The if you actually pay for your software, you might get some quality.
We take it from the beginning, so we go back here, run this from the beginning. We like to show you the effect first and then the tool at the second place. Let's just do some social engineering attacks. We do the web attack. Here we go, and then do the credential harvesting attack. There it is. And let's do some web templates.
They have templates for the most popular ones. Interesting, huh? This is also for free. Good to know.
So I do need the IP address of myself, my own machine, and then just copy it from here and paste it over there. There you go. And says, hey, which site would you like to? We do have templates for Gmail, Google, Facebook, Twitter, Yahoo. Let's do the Gmail stuff. So now the social engineering toolkit is up and running, ready to serve the Gmail login page to whomever our victim is.
So are you using Gmail ever? I didn't mean for you to raise your hands. I'm just asking. It's a question you can ask yourself.
Yeah, I'll just clear my history. There we go. And then go ahead and...
So now you pretend you're somebody else. Is it that strong?
Does it work that well? Works very, very well.
Little bit too well, right?
Too well. Let's see. I know what the problem is. Well, this is the other tool you need to know and worry about.
I can sing and dance while you fix it instead. You don't have to pretend.
Actually, I'm just scanning the network. I'm running in parallel on another computer on the same network as our victim. This is our victim, the 131.107.1.132. So let's add that victim to the NAT portion of this device. And now this device is able to perform a lot of things. One of them is R poisoning, and another one is DNS poisoning.
Oh, so you forgot to set this up, right?
No, actually it was running, but we did something with the machine.
Admit it.
Okay. So I would like to send it to 228. You remember that address, the attacker's address? And this is a DNS entry. So this tool is actually going to monitor DNS request made by that victim. And whenever it starts requesting in host record for www.gmail.com, it will return that IP address. So let's start the R poisoning. We start the DNS poisoning as well. And then go back to our victim again. So let's try a command line. Ping www.gmail.com. And let's see if that gets... It's already in the cache, ipconfig.
And it is front slash.
Yeah. Thank you. And as you can see here, the DNS poisoning is actually just running perfectly. Before that, we had the real address of www.gmail.com. Now, after the DNS poisoning was started, we sending the client to our own web server, so www.
Why does DNS poisoning work that easily? Well, it's UDP. It's connectionless, not connection-oriented. So if you query the DNS server for a DNS entry, whoever's respond the first, it's got to be the one you trust.
So now we're ending up in the login page. This is actually a copy of the gmail.com login page. So it's exactly all the content is the same. The scripts are the same. Small, tiny modification has been made to it by the tool. So if you, Marcus, would try to type in something. I think in, an H somewhere.
Yeah. Keep forgetting his name.
Yeah.
If you wonder how I got his password, it's because one time at an MVP summit, he had this session about trojanizing a rootkit in computers. And I said, do you think you can find my rootkit? And he said, yeah, of course, I'm Mark Rusinovich. I can find anything. So anyhow, I gave him one of our kernel keyloggers that is fairly stealthy. And I asked him politely, could I install this this rootkit in your computer and see if you can find it? He said, yeah, sure. So I went up to the stage where I was talking in front of a lot of MPs, and I put my USB stick in there, and I double-clicked it and installed it. And I took it out, and it spoke some more, and suddenly his computer went into hibernation, and the rootkit crashed, and he was kind of making fun of me, like, damn, that was an unstable rootkit. And I smiled to myself and said, fine. Then I went home with his password hashes, because I was running a password extraction tool, not the damn rootkit. So, anyhow, so don't give bad guys physical access to your computers. That's the take home from that. So, I'm not going to use his real password. That would probably bring me... I mean, I like the guy. I mean, I look up to him. I attended his sessions forever, so I'm joking about him because of that. So this is just a joke, I think, right? So, logging on as Mark. Yeah, this is some conversation we had lately. I don't know. Anyhow,
yeah.
This is a set demonstration, not a discussion regarding Mark Rusinovich. So let's look in the background and see what really happened.
Yeah, so what happened in the background, it's actually sitting there and waiting for that login information.
And even though this is funny, so let's be serious for a while. This is Gmail. It didn't look strange. We haven't downgraded anything. We haven't really done anything to this computer to stage this. This is the real world. This is DNS spoofing in combination with the set framework. So I think that's important to understand. Yeah. You can do this with tools that you don't have to pay one single dime for. You can do this today on the Microsoft network here at Tekka. It's kind of scary, isn't it? We tried to do this with Outlook.com, didn't work. So I'm not saying you should switch from Gmail, I'm just saying that there are differences between different implementations.
Yeah. For the Outlook.com, why it didn't work there, because Outlook.com is forwarding to live.com for login purposes, so you're never logging in at the Outlook.com per se. So then you need to carry out a spoofing attack on many different sites and networks at the same time. It's not impossible, it's more difficult.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Could you show the features of Interceptor?
So
can you
sure. Just break that.
Show that a little bit more.
Go back to the beginning. So we can do phishing attacks, or we can just go to the back here. Social engineering attacks, we can... actually, this is integrated with Metasploit as well. Social engineer toolkit that's in the background running everything. So we do the social engineering pieces. Spear phishing, website attack vectors, which the one I just showed you. Infected media generator, just generate a Trojan and put it on the website, or personalize a website and let your victims go to there. Mass emailing, SMS spoofing, wireless access points, and so on. QR codes, you can build in URLs and QR codes, of course, and send them to malicious content. And so
QR code generator attack vector. Do you often validate the QR codes before you scan them? It's kind of funny.
So short URLs, QR codes are very useful for attackers. We're very used with short URLs in Twitter and Facebook and so on.
Do you know why they're using PowerShell? Look at number 10 there. It's pretty interesting. There is a reason for using PowerShell. PowerShell is, to me, one of the tools you should know and worry about. And I love PowerShell. It's an amazing tool. I really do. But there are reasons, from a threat perspective, to mind or to be aware about the problems with PowerShell. And I'm not saying PowerShell is a problem per se. I'm saying if you have security problems, so somebody can execute code on your machine, PowerShell will enable them to do it in a way so that you cannot pick up. You cannot see what's going on antivirus systems and stuff like that. because the things that are being executed within the PowerShell process. It's not a binary that you can just scan, right? And if you browse the web, you can see that there are a lot of discussions about whoever can come up with the coolest way of using PowerShell. There are ready-to-use scripts that you can use just to, for example, inject shellcode into the PowerShell session. So using PowerShell, you can invoke .NET. Using invoke.NET, you can invoke shellcode. So that means what's being, if you compile your .NET code, it's just going to be the same DLL runtime thing that's going on every time you do anything. You can't really monitor that. It's not going to be a different binary every time you compile something within PowerShell. It's being compiled at runtime. So I'm not saying you should take away PowerShell. I'm just saying that's how they do it. You should be aware of that. So you should not trust the fact, if you have a computer that you think is hacked, that's because you can't find anything on antivirus, does not mean it's not hacked. That's where they were aiming for right now. They go for PowerShell, among other things, of course. It's kind of odd, right? Why PowerShell? Because there's a lot of power in there. That was not a joke, so it's okay you didn't laugh. Fine.
So that was the social engineering toolkit, and that was as well the other tool we use here over here.
Can you show some of the features of Interceptor?
It's called the Interceptor NG. What we saw, the NATing or the ARP spoofing and the DNS spoofing attacks, as you can see here, it's actually have built-in attacks for the automatic proxy configuration in our web browser. So whenever a web browser is looking for automatic proxy config, it can actually provide that with a proxy script config on the fly if we do that. We can do SSL stripping, and that means actually decoding the SSL stream, replacing the server certificate with a certificate of its own, so it can decode the whole SSL session, and so on. So these are some of the features available in this. We can scan, we're looking for interesting protocols and authentication protocols, passwords and clear and so on. And interesting for messaging protocol as well. Here we see all the communication has been going forth and back by that victim, the client I was running, accessing Gmail. So everything is kept here. I can look in all the images have been downloaded and everything, and the flow. Very, very powerful tool. There are some other similar tools we've used over the years. Kane is another tool. We're going to use it later on, just to show you some of the strengths in Kane. It has a whole set of decoders that can actually decode different protocols and bring in most interesting things from of type of content from these protocols. We're going to run it again, as I said, not starting here. I think it goes in conflict with the interceptor itself because they want to acquire access to the network card, per se. Pretty interesting tools. As you can see here, I just clicked my way from start to end. This wasn't running, just few clicks, and we were running an attack, full scale. Very, very interesting tools, and we would like to define them as very lethal tools as well.
You define them as lethal? Mm-hmm. You think they can kill you?
No, they can kill your connections, your
That's even worse,
secret
right?
information, yeah. They can be you, so you're not needed anymore.
Yeah. No, that's called computing, man. You're not needed anymore. So anyhow, those are some very important tools you should know and worry about.
Mm-hmm.
Stealing somebody's password or reading their email, that's bad, right? And as a matter of fact, when you read people's email, you find a lot of other passwords to other services as well, because whenever you do a password reset and stuff like that, it ends up in your email. And people tend to reuse emails and stuff. So there's a lot of things you should think about. But let's look at something even more dangerous, if you will. Which number is this guy? He put it on number two.
Two, here we go.
So this is another computer. It's just a regular Windows 7, 64-bit. It could as well have been a Windows 8. And One thing that you should not worry about are weaponized attachments in emails or weaponized files that doesn't really appear to be exe files. That is the number one way of compromising environments today. Big examples like RSA and all the others has been falling for this. French government. I mean, I'm just talking about the stuff that's been in the papers. We see a lot more. So I'm going to give you an example of what that looks like and what you can do. And again, this is a... It looks like a funny demonstration, but this is a real weaponized PowerPoint. So by running this PowerPoint show, you're going to get hacked. And this is made by a guy I have great respect for, actually. His name is Hassan Al-Shakarti. So he made it kind of convenient. And again, you would never download a PowerPoint, right? You're not going to download the PowerPoints after the sessions on TechEd? You know, we have right access to the folders where they put them. Just think about that for a while. Own the world. So if you get TrueSec promotion on your desktop every day, you know why. Anyhow,
we just want to help you.
This is a configurable attack tool. We made it easy so that we can use it for different targets if we would ever sell it to some security interested government or something. So you can set the address or the URL to any tool you want to download. So what this one does, it's fairly versatile. Whenever you run the show, it will go to this URL and download and start an exe file. We have an alternative version that can do JPEG files as well. So you download a JPEG file, that's what the firewalls can think anyway. And then it's going to run. Just food for thought, right? And of course, something needs to be happening when this code hits, so let's talk about the back end. This is a simple interpreter Trojan. So one of the other tools you should worry about is Metasploit Framework. But I'm not going to run just Metasploit Framework. I'm going to make you worry about another tool as well. So this is actually something called Linux, unless you didn't know. And this is Kali. Just joking. This is the backtrack, which now is the evolution of that is called. This is a hacker ISO computer that you can just download and run right off the shelf. So I have installed something called Cobalt Strike. That is a very effective GUI for Metasploit. And it's actually not just a GUI, it adds some features as well. It's a commercial tool. There is a free-to-use version of Cobalt Strike called Armitage. So if you heard about Armitage before, this is Armitage on steroids. And the reason I want to demonstrate it is it's not just nice to watch, but it's actually highly automated and simple to use. So this one is actually waiting for hacked computers as of right now. So imagine that the infrastructure looked like this. This is the guy or girl sitting with his PowerPoint, and they're going to click it. And I want you to pay attention to the big black field. There's no icon of a computer here, right? So if there is an icon later, it means that computer has become hacked, okay? So I'm going to go back to the target. I'm going to pretend I'm him. I'm going to close this down. And I'm just going to run the slideshow. While I do that, I'm going to look at the other side. Wait a second, and boom! There is a connection. I like the coloring of that computer. It's red, that means it's hacked. So, yeah, and it's being enumerated, so now they know it's a Windows 7. And the dude logged on, his name is Marcus. That's embarrassing, but anyhow. So, what would you do now? Well, I'm going to leverage on this, and I'm going to start a scan. So I'm not just, since this is obviously a computer with this IP address, I'm going to scan this network. I'm actually going to scan a few hosts to save some time. I'm going to start the scan. So he will try to figure out what's on the target network. And this is something you need to understand. Whenever somebody gets malware inside a computer nowadays, that is usually just the beginning of an attack. They're not going to settle for taking what you have on your machine. They're going to look at the network around you. And this tool will automate this for you using all the Metasploit commands right away. So it's just enumerating the computer in your absolute network segment. So if you wait a little while, you're going to know exactly who's there and what's installed, what services they're running, because they're doing port scans and version scans and stuff like that. And I'm going to allow it to do its job for a while. So the first thing you would do if you enter an internal network, because clients are usually connected to internal network, it's going to change though, with the cloud and all. But you will look for the low-hanging fruit. If you find an XP computer, Windows Server 2003 or 3R2, then there's a good chance you can just fire away using these tools. No configuration, just automatically hack stuff. If you have SQL servers with weak username and passwords and stuff, you're probably just going to be able to hack them right away. So I'm going to give you an example. I'm going to use a super duper very old operating system. This is Windows 2000. It doesn't really matter. I know you're not running in 2000 anymore. If you are, keep quiet, okay? So if I want to attack them, I can just right click and it will actually show me what attacks are valid for this machine. So let's say I'm going to do this. And if it turns red, it means it's dead. Boom. So now I own that box. How cool is that, right? So what I can do now, I can do a lot of things. I'm going to show you the functionality within the interpreter. I can steal tokens, dump hashes. I'm actually going to dump the hashes of this guy. So I'm going to steal all the usernames and encrypted passwords. But I can do other things as well. One other example is, if I want to see what's going on this computer over here, why not interact, like, get this desktop? So if I want to see what it's doing, I can even do the webcam, but it's kind of boring. I'm going to see myself. You have been selected. It's obviously still using that PowerPoint, which is kind of boring. So I can interact with that. I think. Yeah, so I can interact with that. And again, normally I would have a bigger screen, but I'm on his desktop. I can play with his stuff. A real hacker wouldn't. He would just sit and watch while you're logging on to your systems to see how you do your everyday job. Watch and learn how you interact with all those banking applications and stuff, whatever it is. And if you're at the office, it's going to see what you're doing at the office. If you work for a defense industry or a bank or something, it's going to know how things are being done at your job. This is how they do it today. They're getting more and more technical savvy. And it's a perfect remote admin tool as well. Remember, I stole the password hashes, right? I want to hack this guy, but that's a more modern machine, so I probably can't do it right away using an exploit. So I'm going to do another pass the hash exploit. And they have a database, so these are actually the password hashes I stole from that Atom machine. I can just click them. Marcus ADM, take the hash. I could enumerate the name of the domain. I kind of know it, so it's going to be faster. And launch. And things are happening. So if it turns red, it means I own him too. Boom. And I can go on all day. Well, the domain controller, why not? Maybe some people are stupid enough log on with the real domain admin account on another server, who knows? Or service accounts or anything. And it may or may not sound like a joke to you, but I could probably run this tool in most of my customers that I see every day and be equally successful, even though it would take more time using this tool today. And it's not because the operating systems are weak, it's because There are always some misconfigurations, some system dependencies, stuff like that. So what do you think? Do you think this is a tool you should not worry about? No? Okay, is this a tool you think you should know or worry about?
Yes.
Thank you. You're waking up. Nice. So, what are we going to talk about now? Well, there is another interesting feature here. I'm not going to use it right now, but there's something called pivoting. I think that's good to know. You can set up pivot so that whenever somebody is, for example, opening up Internet Explorer, you can watch their session inside their session. So you can have the same Internet Explorer session up running simultaneously. So if they are logging into a bank, it means you are logged on in their context at the same time. And for you guys who saw that video before the session started, that was an example of that, people using pivoting. So what they did is, and this is what they do in these attacks. They control the computer, and then they call the guy sitting in front of the computer. They know his number because they know everything about him because they're browsing his computer. So they always find details about who he is and where he lives and stuff like that. Let's check all his email. If you ever order anything off the internet, his address is going to be there with name, phone number, everything. So they actually send some error messages, and they wait an hour or two. And they send the error messages while you're surfing the bank. Like, there is a problem with your bank, with our banking services right now, so it's going to be fixed in a few hours. And then they call you back 2 hours later, and did you notice, hi, I'm from this Rabobank. Did you notice that we had a problem with the banking service 2 hours ago? Yes, that's something that was actually affecting your account, so I want, for verification purposes, I want you to log on right now. And can you please punch in the PIN code? Do you see the PIN code 15342? No, I don't. What do you see? Well, I see 123467. Okay, thank you. And then they log on as him and they do the transactions. But they do this in a mass scale. Another interesting thing about this video is that there are call centers in, for example, Eastern Europe and in other places as well, where you can hire people to sit and do those calls for you. They make thousands and thousands of calls to Trojanized, or owners of Trojanized computers, following the script. It's pretty interesting. I think you should know about that. So, what's next? I think we should talk a little bit about Mimikatz.
Mm-hmm.
And that relates to the dependency attacks, and it's kind of interesting. We used to write those tools ourselves. Like we had tools like gsig dump and msvctl and lsl. So I have no idea if you ever saw them. Some of you might have used them. They were really popular. Unfortunately, they were so popular so that when Mandiant, if you ever heard about them, they wrote a big report because they have been intercepting a Chinese agency hacking a lot of resources in Europe and the US. So they wrote this report, and they had an inventory of all the tools used by the Chinese attackers. They found our tools there. We didn't know if we were proud or embarrassed, but our entire corporate website got blacklisted for a while until we told them, because that's where they could download the tools. Anyhow, what I'm trying to say is that even though our tools were really effective, they're not the best anymore. We actually stopped developing them because there is one tool that is so much better. It's a tool called Mimikatz. I want to credit this guy. And his name is Benjamin. He has made a framework with a lot of functions and plugins that can steal almost anything that has to do with credentials on your system. So it does a lot of evil things. And it's kind of interesting to watch the tool working. Mm. You will have different results depending on whether or not you're using an XP computer, Windows 7, Windows 8, Server 2012 R2. But one thing is for sure, it will still get password hashes of the newest and brandest system in the world. So even though you're on Windows Server 2012 R2 or 8.1, it can take your password hashes. It's not a weakness in Microsoft platforms. It's a fact that if you want to have single sign-on, if you want your computer to be able to connect to external resources with a click of a button, It means the password or something password equivalent is stored there somehow, right? Or a token, something. So some people say, well, how can Microsoft do that? Well, it's any operating system, any application that can do single sign-on has the exact same problem. But you want to make it difficult enough so that not everybody can do it. And he's really challenging these security implementations.
Yeah. So just, this is Windows 8.1 Enterprise Edition. And we just run the secure LSA logon passwords. It's going to go try looking into the LSA LSS process. This is where I started it. So let's just drill down. And it says there is an interactive logon for user administrator on the SEC demo. These are the different authentication providers. We do have the MSV, the Kerberos, the Digest, and Live SSP, and so on. As you can see here, this guy has been logged into the domain. We don't have any clear text password for this. We still have the encrypted version. This is the anti-hash for that user account. These are the credential keys. So this is the anti-hash value for that user account. Now, we can send this in a cracker and try to figure out the clear text password. On the other hand, these tools, Mimikatz and other tools, are able to do pass the hash nowadays. So you can use it right away and just without the need to know the clear text version of it. Let's just try the same thing on a Windows 7 machine.
You don't have old machines like Windows 7, right?
Well, Windows 7 is still a supported operating system, so let's see. So we do the same thing over here. It has too many spaces, so. And then do logon passwords again on this one. Okay, it says, hey, you're not an admin. Oh, sorry about that. So let's close this guy. Am I an admin on this? Yes, I am. Let's do that. As you can see here, it requires you to be either a system account or an admin account so you can acquire those privileges needed to do this operation. So let's do the same thing. And then do the logon passwords again. Oh, yeah, right. That's right. I need actually to be a system account. So I need to make myself that. So
he doesn't have enough rights, so Mimikatz will give them to him.
Give me some more privileges. I would like to get my debug privileges. There we go. And then I can repeat the logon passwords. So, well, I'm a local admin. I do have the right to acquire my debug privileges, so it will give me system level access. And now I got all that information presented again. So there is a local admin guy logged in here on CLI4. And this is the anti-hash value. And that is the single sign-on for the terminal services, the Digest authentication protocol, the Kerberos clear text password. In case this was a domain account and we didn't yet have communication with our domain controller, this is cached in memory and clear text until we do have possibility to acquire our Kerberos tickets, and then it will disappear. So we can see that. But we can see, as you see here, we see it for other providers. Now, these providers are disabled by default. The terminal services, the Digest, are disabled by default in Windows 8, Windows 8.1. So Microsoft has done something or actually figured out that, hey, why do we need them enabled? The user should take care about enabling them whenever they are needed. It's not necessary to have them there. We got information about other services account, the computer account itself, and so on. Now, we do have some other interesting things. I will do that on a domain joined machine, just so we have something to play with. We can actually play with certificates and private keys. Let's see, this is a bit longer, so I did it like that. So I'm going to go ahead here and tell the Mimikatz to...
Wait. You didn't get it.
Come on, copy. I will tell it, would you please export the certificates in the system store, local machine store? Just export everything you find there and put them in files. It says, of course, there is a key pair in the local machine my store. Now that has been exported, so it created a file for me, and that file should be available here. So these are the certificates, the computer certificates exported, both the certificate itself and the PFX file, which includes the private key. And if I would like to do the same thing myself, this is the local computer certificate stores. This is the computer cert. If I try to export it myself, it's actually flagged with a non-exportable private key. So because Mimikatz know how to get its way into the dig internally into the system and gets those privileges the system itself has, because the system can use the private key. So somebody has the knowledge about what the private key is, so Mimikatz can dig its way through and grab that private key and put it in the file anyways. So these are just a couple of things this tool can do. Let's see if I can just go back to this list. This is list. Now you got the token and the other type of the security credential vaults, all the saved passwords and so on. We do have some ability to play with events, event logs, and so forth. Services, other processes, and other privileges, of course. And the Kerberos, we can do pass the hash, pass the ticket, and so on, or pass the token. The crypto and the key processing as well. If you want to know more about this tool in particular, I would recommend you guys to go to, there is a wiki. The guy who's created this actually holds a wiki. So here you see all the modules, and there are samples about how to use them, all of them. So you can see the commands. It's an open source tool as well. So you can download and play with it if you would like to know some more about the internals of the Windows operating system.
And again, the reason people use these tools in attacks is because of system dependencies. They compromise one computer, and if you expose keys on that system, that can be reused in order to access other systems. That is when it becomes a valuable attack tool. So this is for expanding influence over a network. That's why I use it. And it's just an interesting thing with the computer accounts is that if you have a valid computer account and a certificate and stuff on a computer, then you can pose as a domain controller. So there is an attack that you can do. So that you can spoof and make people connect to you when they're going to log on to the domain. And the attack that we have seen, what it does, it will actually make you consume a group policy so that you will get a startup script or a logon script. So it can execute code on your system, and then it will redirect you to the domain controller. And you will get a valid logon. So There is a way to fix that. It's just a register setting or a group policy setting. But we're going to run a session tomorrow about how to secure systems. So we have a session for all that stuff tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Even passing the hash problems, all that stuff's going to be covered.
Yeah.
So we scare you today and we make you happy again before you leave. Mm-hmm. That's nice, huh?
So that's Mimikatz. Okay. You want to go back to your...
I need some time, so enjoy them. Do something.
What should we do? Anybody has tried my wireless network so far? No? Why? You're making me a little bit disappointed. Yeah, I'm not showing you much more than that. Right now, we will go back to it, but just want to show you something I had on my blog. This is a picture I took on Saturday, just when we arrived at the hotel. I just, a little bit curious, I set up my antennas and started sniffing the wireless around. It's a speaker hotel. So I actually got an IMAP logon in clear text. That was why I posted that picture and said...
We're not going to tell you what speaker it was, right?
No, I know. He or she should suppose himself very lucky because Wireshark crashed and I lost that dumb file. So So the password is not in the picture. If you zoom it in, you will not see the password. I don't have these packets focused on in this part of the Wireshark. So I've been doing this sniffing wireless every ticket, both in the US and Europe. And so far, we haven't missed any ticket without clear text passwords.
There hasn't been a ticket when you did not find it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we always had some clear text password whenever we did our sniffing, either here at ticket at the convention center or back at the hotel somewhere.
Yeah. There are some tools that aren't very sexy, but still really effective. So I'm going to show you another example.
There we go.
And another thing you do as soon as you obtain internal access to a network, and this is interesting because when we do penetration tests, still today, this is the first thing we will try. The reason for that is that it's the easiest way to obtain server credentials, to compromise the first server. So we will actually brute force for SA accounts, but we always use a tool called, or we use something similar to a tool called Hydra, I don't know how you say it in the US. But it's a very competent tool. I'm going to show the tool for you and show you what it can do. So even though it's not the newest kid on the block, it's really competent. And this is not the latest version. There is a version called version 8. No, CD. This is a problem with live demos. And another problem is getting old. Mm-hmm. That was supposed to be a joke. But maybe you're older than me, so you don't think it's funny. I don't know. I have no idea. Where is Hydra? Damn. Yeah, maybe I should go to my attack machine instead of doing this on my real machine. Hmm. Yeah, that will help. Dear. Yes, much better. Hack, dear. CD Hydra. Yeah, why make it easy when you can make it difficult, right? So the thing about Hydra is it can brute force a large number of protocols. So you can do brute force attacks towards HTTP, GETs, POSTs, forms. You can use proxy stuff. You can do IMAP, LDAP, MSSQL, MySQL, Oracle, even though it's unbreakable, which is interesting, especially since we did a pen test on a bank and we found this Oracle Sun Enterprise mm-hmm. One server, and we found 3 zero-days in the server itself, in the IIS equivalent server, in a 1 week pen test. We posted all 3 of them to Oracle, and they fixed 2. One is still around because it's by design, so they can't fix it. So we always have a backdoor to Oracle servers. Interesting. We're not publishing it though, so we keep it for ourselves, like others do as well. That's something you should know and worry about. So I'm going to use Hydra just as an example to brute force a SQL server. I just want to show you how easy it is to use. And you have to follow, this is a fairly new version, so you have to follow this syntax you're using. So you use Hydra, and then you can try to brute force, for example, the SA account, if it's a SQL server. And then you're going to use a password list of your own choice. Sorry, large capital P. It's kind of dark here. So I'm going to use the one called pass. And then you target a service, so it's going to be MSSQL:// Damn, it's hard to see here. Can somebody bring me a light? No? I'll give you a chocolate bar. By the way, did you have any chocolate bars today? Did you ever have any Swedish chocolate bars? Can Hassan maybe hand a few out? You gave me a light. Yeah. I'm going to give you a chocolate bar. Yeah, he did. Thank you. So this is what happens when you're nice to the speaker, okay? And this is what happens if you're really fast, a fast runner. And this is what happens if you're unlucky and you don't raise your hand fast enough. That was a joke. This is the US, I wouldn't dare to do that, so you have to be fast. Always sit in the front seat of my sessions. That's a take home. So, where was I? I'm losing track here. 192,
so keep going.
16,
keep going.
Can you hold the, I'll give you a bar of chocolate if you hold a light for
no.
me. What are you doing? Are you flirting again? Did you trade me for this or you want it back?
No, I'm just giving away some
chocolate
bars.
Thank you. That's a swag,
what
right?
What else?
You didn't pay for
over
it.
Over there.
I paid for the damn chocolate. Anybody wants these, just go grab them. It's hot in here. Water? Anyone? There you go. So anyhow, this simple tool, it did some password tries, and it found the SAP username with the password of password. This is just a simple password, but it's kind of strange. When you're on an internal network, the secret passwords are often very weak. So this is not uncommon that you can find someone that you can use. And I'm just going to, as an example, use another old TruSec tool called SQL Shell to utilize what I just found. So I'm going to connect with the credentials I just stole, 192.168.194.104. Then I'm going to do an SQL logon, as opposed to an integrated logon, with the SA account using the password of password. And this is a neat tool. It can do file transfers, it can enable SQL shell, and it can do a lot of things. But I'm just going to use it right away, like ipconfig. And I can see that I'm on this machine 104 with a host name of IS4. And if I look at who I am myself, I'm a different system. Host name, this is A4 with another IP address. Not 104, this is 4. So this is a very convenient tool to navigate around internal environments or to get your first foothold on a SQL server. And on the internal networks, it's still very common that they run in high privs. So if you compromise the SQL server with a high priv SA account, using these tools, you will be logged on a system. And if your system, you can do all the things that Mimikatz did a couple of minutes ago. So that's something you need to think and worry about. If a domain admin ever logs onto the SQL server, I will own the enterprise. Because it's now compromised. And don't believe that he has to be logged on right now when I'm there. If I were a real hacker, I would install a script that would poll this server continuously. So if he ever logs on, I would be notified. And it will be stored. So it's not about, there are a lot of mitigation techniques that even Microsoft talk about, like, well, we're going to close the window. The credentials is going to be there for a short time. Well, if I'm in the system, I'm going to monitor it. I'm going to wait it out. I can do that automatically. I don't have to stay there. As long as I have credentials enough to hang around. So the security solution is be proactive. Don't let bad guys have system access to your systems. That's how simple it is. There are a lot of good features in the Microsoft operating system that can help you with that. Most of them aren't used. We need to start using them. That's what makes the difference. So that's one thing you should know and worry about. Another thing you should know and worry about, there is something going on. We're actually starting to outsource. We call it the cloud nowadays. Ever heard about the cloud? Are you connected? So, another interesting thing with the cloud is the fact that you have to trust the people that you choose to host your systems, right? But most people, they think that, well, sure, but again, we're just putting our systems there. if they log on to them, we would know. I mean, there would be, you know, logons and stuff, and they don't have credentials. They just own the boxes, or they just own the infrastructure underneath. But those environments are virtualized. So what do you think is in the memory file of a virtual machine at runtime? What do you think you can find if you take the memory of a domain controller in runtime and do a snapshot of the memory? What do you think is going to be stored there? Yeah, in order for the domain controller to be able to verify logons, it has to store the hashes in RAM, right? So if I can read the RAM, it means I'm going to get the hashes. I'm just going to prove it to you. I'm going to use a tool that you should know and worry about, not because it's a hacker tool. What you should worry about is trusting the wrong people with your systems as a virtualization partner. That's what you should worry about. So if you think that an expensive provider is expensive, wait till you find a cheap provider. That can be more expensive. You understood? Mm-hmm. Great. So I'm going to go to folder. And I have a dump from a domain controller, just as an example. I do have some steps here, because this is sometimes a little bit consuming to write this stuff. No, I'm going to use another. I'm just going to use strings. I'm just going to do one of my greatest heroes at Tekken, Mark Rosinowitz tools, strings. How cool is that? So I'm going to use strings on the DC mem. So this is volatility. It's a very simple to use tool. It has a lot of different features. Sorry, vol. Yeah, it's a Python script. Python script, sorry. No. Why am I doing this? I'm going to use strings. Yeah. Okay, why am I trying to use volatility? You should tell me to stop doing the wrong thing. It's your fault, Hassan.
You're in the way. I'm not seeing the screen.
Well, you can look at the big... There's a screen over there.
Or this one.
So
while C is figuring his way out...
What strings does, it can interpret the binary format and find everything that is readable inside. So I'm just going to use strings, and I'm going to find it through find string.
And I'm going to give you a challenge, guys. The very first one who gives me a clear text password on my wireless network will get 2 bars.
Yeah. Well, that means you don't think you're important. Colon, that was not the best thing to search for, actually.
No, just use the current.
I'm going to search for something else. Yeah, current.
Current is a scam.
Yeah, that's better.
No. Sorry.
Damn. Yeah.
Okay.
So we're looking through a memory file, so it's going to be a lot of things that we can't read. But again, if I am a hoster, this is just a VMware mem file of ESX or whatever. And of course, there is no difference between VMware and Hyper-V or whatever in this case. I mean, the tools may or may not support it, but they have the same problem. You don't encrypt memory at runtime. You use it. Yeah, you can do this with any file format. Sometimes you need to convert them and play with them. Then you should use Monsols, for example. This Matthew Swiss guy, who's a really bright Microsoft security MVP. He made those tools, Moonsols, Monsols, or whatever you call it. So you can always fix it.
Yeah. In this particular case, because Mark is using the find string, or the strings tool, it doesn't really matter. Just the safe state file, you're speaking about probably the bin file, which is a safe state in Hyper-V, you can just use it right away.
So now your hoster can impersonate anyone in your network. Either he can pass the hash if he gets on that LAN, which he can because he's the hoster, and there will be a validated, authenticated logon that won't look very strange in the logs. Again, it's okay if you trust him. I'm just saying this is possible. Don't go for the cheapest, go for somebody you trust. Otherwise, you should worry about this. And it's kind of interesting nowadays. We believe that we don't expose logons to our internal networks, to our corporates, But again, look at your phone. Are you reading emails off your phone from your corporate network? How do you think those services work? Don't you think your password is stored on your phone? Have you forgot that? So if I have that hash, I can at least read your email from the internet, if your phone can. Unless you're doing some VPN or something that I don't think you do on your phone. So these are things you should know and worry about. Don't give your hashes away. Even though they're not on the internal network, they may be able to get stuff. Why do you all look so sad?
Well, five that's at least a good password recovery method.
I'm going to show you one more tool before I give Hassan the closing demo. This is a bit unstable, but it's unstable in virtual environments. It's very stable in real environment, but I'm not going to run this. Windows Update needs my help. Everybody wants my help. It's crazy. So this tool is a traditional Trojan. It's called CyberGate XL. I'm not even going to run this on something else. I'm just going to run this locally on this machine. And again, it's kind of unstable, so maybe I'm going to have to restart the machine because I used this a couple of minutes ago, and it fails on me sometimes. But not this time, not yet anyway. So whenever somebody executes this Trojan, this is what's going to happen. You're going to be able to monitor the file system, install programs, registry device. You can do remote desktop. It's kind of funny. You know, especially when you monitor yourself, which is kind of stupid. Woo! So, if you don't have any disco lights when you have a party back home, you can always play with this tool. But again, it can do a lot of nasty stuff. The reason I'm showing this as an example is $49 on the web. That's Google for CyberGate. They do services. I mean, they have support. No, if you... You will receive a support ticket the minute after you send them an email. It's true. If you want to browse the file system, special folders, look what they have on the desktop, whatever, go ahead. If you want to upload your attack tool, whatever, just upload, download, execute. This is kind of cute. Execute hidden, even more cute. Memory execute, so you can execute binaries without touching disk. Stuff like that. So there's nothing there. So this is, I think, a tool that you should not worry about. If you're not worried about this, I don't know what. then you're the toughest guy I know. I wouldn't fight you in a dark alley, that's for sure. So these Trojans, and this is what you're going to get in your email attachments and stuff. This is what you're going to get when, I mean, God forbid, you would never do that, but if somebody in your family or neighborhood or your office would do some BitTorrenting or something like that. When you get stuff for free on the internet, there's a good chance you're going to get something extra. A little spice to the beef, steak, whatever. That sounds good in Swedish. I don't think that really played out well in this language. Anyhow. Mm-hmm. So, we have 3 more minutes. Anything you want to show? You did some wireless stuff, right?
I want to go back to my wireless things over here. Let's see, I've just been having Wireshark, just sniffing, using these two antennas. And I thought that nobody is willing to connect to my wireless network to demonstrate this for you guys, so I'm doing it myself. So I'm using an old-fashioned, well-known POP3, as you can see here.
And it's kind of funny. He does POP3, and I mean, IMAP and POP3, those are the protocols you're looking for, stuff like that, and most people aren't using them. I get that. But it's kind of funny. 2 years ago at TechEd, one of the speakers in the security track made an authentication using their phone to their office. Check their mail on their corporate account, and we got the clear text password. And that person speaks in the security track. It's kind of funny.
So I'm just...
It can happen to anybody, right? Yeah. On a bad day. That was a bad day for that person.
I'm just refreshing my email client. So once I press that, it's all there. This one is connected to my tiny access point. So it's happening on the fly.
I can stop. I can see it again. Yeah. I can see it already.
Yeah, you see it there. It's already filtered with POP3, so we see all the information. That's the pass. Yeah. We just registered that account just before the session, just to show you this.
The real password was something different.
Yeah. So it's just as easy and simple as that. If I'm able to sniff and listen on the network, if it is an open network like this, I don't even to do any man in the middle. I don't even need to perform any other more advanced activities. I just grab the packages as they are and then have a good, decent tool to dig through them. You can use Wireshark if you know how to use it. Of course, you can get a whole lot of it. You can use other utilities. I'll just show you guys the Mimikatz. Let's see, I need to save that Wireshark in a more working. Version. Let's see, I can stop this one and go back to that. So I guess just going to stop that and save the stream as a regular PCAP file. Sorry about that. And just open it here. Oh yeah, that's the wrong desktop. There you go, test.
If you leave now, you're not going to know how to get this. Just so you know.
Go ahead, Marcus.
Yeah, while you do that stuff, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You're going to show the same password you just found with a new tool. Cool stuff, huh? New. I can find what I just found. Good for you, man.
No, I just want to show this other tool. That's what we're all about.
I know. I know. I'm just, you know, the word with you.
Yeah.
So anyhow, I can't say that. You want to get rid of me for real? No, I was taken for a year once. It's not going to happen again. So I did something very European. Anyhow, there are some things I want to say. Then I'm going to close up this session so you can go to other sessions and do whatever you want to. Then after that, I'm going to promote some things that I really want to promote. But I'm not going to do it within the formal session. So if you want to run off, fine. If you want to hear what I have to say about that, you stay around. But I want to say one thing first. Me and Asayan has been working together for 10 years at this company, work at TrueSec. So we decided to do something funny. We're going to give away our laptops that we're using. And we have our hacker tools and stuff on them, virtual machines and things. And we're going to lottery them. You don't call it lottery. What do you call it when you give them out for somebody with a lottery? You're going to raffle it. I heard it yesterday. It sounded so cool. We're going to raffle them out. Yeah, we're going to raffle them out. So we have a booth. In 1947, it's all the way down and all the way right. If you go there, you fill out this small, just your name and email address or something. We're going to raffle them out tomorrow, 6:15 p.m. So my laptop and a science laptop. So if you want them, they have touch screens, RAM. The RAM is good. It's processors, latest generation, good stuff. So if you want them, go down to the booth. If you want to talk to us, stuff like that, go to the booth. Now I'm formally going to say thank you and ask you to fill out the evals. Then I'm going to talk about some other things if you're interested. Okay? Cool. So if you like this session or if you didn't like this session, doesn't matter. Please fill out the evals. It's really valuable for us. It's a big thing. I mean, we've been doing this for many years, but it's still a big thing to go to TechEd. And we really want to hear what you have to say about our sessions. We work a lot with them. We do it for you. So if there's something we could do better, or if there's something we shouldn't be doing or whatever, or if you really liked it, please give us a verbal feedback. It's really valuable. So formally, thank you very much for attending. Thank you. Yeah, okay. So this is a link to a drive where we're going to put tools and stuff. So if you want to take a photo of this, you can do that. Everybody's got a camera nowadays. another thing I want to promote a little bit is a challenge. If you could, I'm not going to take it up. If you go to challenge.truesec.com, we have some hacker challenges. So they don't cost anything. If you want to log on and try your skills with some web hacking, you can actually log on and just play with it. So I think it's a good challenge if you're interested in security. I also want to promote our session tomorrow. I don't know what time it is. I think it is 5
sometime. Same time as 3:15.
3:15 tomorrow.
In Assembly A.
In Assembly A. We have this session about how to secure your environment. And it's going to be very funny to me if there's less people in that session than it was in this session. That means you just want to have fun. You don't want to learn the real important things. So if you're there tomorrow, we'd be really happy to have you. And we're going to do a lot of, you know, securing Windows the right way. It's not going to be as sexy, but it's going to be even more important, I think. And we also do some training in the U.S., me and Assign. We don't usually do that. We have some dates this fall in Tampa, Florida. So if you're interested in attending our training, we're going to be there, do some 3-day and 5-day hands-on training courses. Web hacking, regular infrastructure hacking, securing Windows, stuff like that. So if you want to do like a masterclass with either one of us, go down to the booth. We have some flyers and stuff there.
Yeah.
So this is the first time we have a booth. We're kind of excited. We actually made a partner company pay for it, so we kind of played with
and
that as well.
We're going to be at the ATE tonight at 6:30, I guess, or 7.
Yes, we have at, was it 6:30? Yeah, there's an AT tonight. If you want to have
7.
A one-on-one, all you 1,300 people can come. We can sit together and chit-chat in an intimate environment. So, and if you want some chocolate, just go get it. If anybody wants a T-shirt, I have one more. But I'm going to throw it. And if you didn't get that T-shirt, you might get this one. Who knows? So, they're not leaving. What's wrong with you people? So, if you have questions and stuff for us, we're going to go down to that booth. So if you're interested, go to 1947. We're going to be there. Scott. And if you don't want to go there, this dude is amazing. Hi. So you should sit in on his session as well. He doesn't do hacking.
Hi.
He does the important stuff.
Good to see you.